We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Go episode 820 of the Al Galdi podcast. It is Friday, May 3rd, 2024. It is the day before Star Wars Day, May 4th. May the 4th be with you. Get it? This is 2 days before Cinco de Mayo. And this is the day after we learned of something that is both sad, but also perhaps encouraging. The demolition of RFK Stadium can proceed. RFK Stadium, the home of the Washington Redskins for the 1961 through 1996 seasons, the home of the Washington Senators for the 1962 through 1971 seasons, the home of the Washington Nationals for the 2005 through 2007 seasons, the home of DC United for the 1996 through 2017 seasons. RFK Stadium is going to be demolished. We on Thursday morning got a statement from the National Park Service, the NPS. That statement included this, quote, "The National Park Service has evaluated the potential effects on the natural, cultural, and human environment related to the demolition of Robert F. Kennedy Memorial Stadium and has determined that the stadium can be demolished." End quote. Now, RFK Stadium has been set to be demolished for a while, but the demolition has been put on hold for various reasons. Now it appears the demolition will be happening. When exactly the stadium will be demolished, we do not know. But obviously, if the Commanders' next stadium is going to be on the RFK Stadium land, and that is a massive if, but if the Commanders' next stadium is going to be on the RFK Stadium land, well, then RFK Stadium does need to be demolished. That statement from the NPS on Thursday morning also included this, quote, "RFK Stadium is located on NPS land. However, the District of Columbia owns the stadium, and Events DC is responsible for its operation and management. The stadium, which opened in 1961, is in a state of disrepair and has not been used since 2019. Events DC has already removed hazardous materials, stadium seats, furniture, fixtures, equipment, trash, and debris." End quote. Yeah, if you in recent years have seen what has become of RFK Stadium, it's not pretty. Kind of like what has happened with the NFL team that used to play its home games in RFK Stadium. But brighter days are ahead for that team, we hope. Hello and welcome to this Friday installment of the Al Galdi podcast. Next segment, an in-depth look at Illinois interior defensive lineman Johnny Newton, who the Commanders took in the second round of the 2024 NFL draft with the number 36 overall pick in the draft. As I will welcome to the podcast, Illinois co-defensive coordinator and defensive line coach Terrence Jamison. Coach Jamison coached Newton for 3 seasons, knows him extremely well, and Coach Jamison is going to give us great insight on what the Commanders are getting in Newton, who in the 2023 season was arguably the best interior defensive lineman in college football. And the Commanders' selection of Newton in the second round has been widely praised as one of the best value picks in the 2024 NFL Draft. Illinois co-defensive coordinator and defensive line coach Terrence Jamison on Johnny Newton next segment. Also on the show, I'll talk Nationals and Orioles. Each team played on Thursday afternoon, but the results were quite different. The Nats lost at the Texas Rangers, 6-0 to lose the series 2-1, a series in which the Nats scored a total of 2 runs. The O's beat the New York Yankees 7-2 at Oriole Park at Camden Yards to win that series 3-1 and to emerge from the series with a 1-game lead on the Yankees for first place in the American League East. You can hit me up on X at Al Galdi. You can email me the Al Galdi podcast at yahoo.com. Email from the former United States ambassador to Belgium, the great Howard Gutman. Ambassador Gutman, a big Commanders fan, a loyal listener of this podcast, and a good friend of and strategic advisor for the Commanders' top limited partner, Mitchell Rales. And the ambassador writes to us regarding Mitchell Rales appearing on a podcast, the Art of Investing podcast, a lengthy interview, what is believed to be the first long-term interview that Rales has done. Writes the ambassador, in the more than 3 decades that I have known Mitch Rales, he has never given a lengthy interview. At the same time, Mitch is an educator at heart. He enjoys sharing his knowledge and experiences with students and young entrepreneurs. So he broke his practice with this particular podcast, which focuses on teaching tomorrow's business leaders. I found the podcast amazing and enlightening on many levels. And while at the surface, most of the podcast does not mention and has nothing to do with our beloved Commanders, at another level, all of the podcast has to do with our beloved Commanders. And Mitch indeed also directly addresses the Commanders. I am not sending this in the hope of attracting any coverage, but I just figured that you would be interested in listening to this and the thoughts as to how to build great businesses and organizations for the long term. Thank you for the email, ambassador. I found this interview of Mitchell Rales to be very interesting, and I found this particular portion of the interview to be especially instructive for us as Commanders fans. So Mitchell Rales, he grew up in Bethesda, Maryland, went to Walt Whitman High School in Bethesda. He and his brother, Stephen Rales, in the 1980s, co-founded Danaher Corporation, which is a Fortune 500 science and technology company. But Mitchell Rales and his wife, Emily Rales, in 2006, founded Glenstone, a private art museum in Potomac, Maryland. This was Rales on this podcast, The Art of Investing, on Glenstone, which, by the way, is free to attend. Here you go.
To get you started, when you arrive at Glenstone, you come into our parking facilities. Each space has a tree. You're feeling the calm of nature as soon as you come in. It's not the traditional parking lot that you would see. You get out of your car, you go to our arrival hall, and you check in, and you then make a 6, 7, 8 minute walk through the landscape to get to the building, to get to the pavilions itself. So you have a chance to decompress along that walkway. You'll see some monumental sculpture along the way. The building is kind of hidden until you start to approach the last couple of minutes of the journey itself. And when you actually get to the building, you're really ready to start to engage. You've left your negative thoughts about what's happening in the world, what's happening in your daily life, the hustle, the bustle that's going on, and you really do get a chance to decompress. So that's what we're about. We're on a mission. We're now 15 plus years in. We think we need another 15 plus years to really create something great here. We're good now, but we're not great. And greatness is a journey that takes time. We hope that all the good decisions that we make at Glenstone in the years to come and in the years past will continue to compound on one another So we'll talk about compounding a lot today, but Glenstone is compounding as well with the decisions we make every day and the learnings that we have and the things that we continue to do to try to up our game and create an experience for our visitors. It's just second to none.
All right. First of all, Mitchell Rales, a very soothing, calming voice. That's part of why I played that part about walking into Glenstone. That was so relaxing. That was so tranquil to hear. But second of all, how about what Mitchell Rales said toward the end of that cut? Quote, "Greatness is a journey that takes time. We hope that all the good decisions that we make at Glenstone in the years to come and in the years past will continue to compound on one another." End quote. You can replace the word Glenstone with the word Commanders. That, in a nutshell, is the philosophy, is the mantra, is the modus operandi for the Josh Harris Group. A big picture approach, an understanding of greatness is a journey that takes time.
Greatness is a journey that takes time.
Yes, thank you, Mitch. Greatness is a journey that takes time. That should be painted on a wall at the Commanders team facility. Greatness is a journey that takes time. Rails in this interview also said that the Commanders intend to build a team Hall of Fame at either their next stadium or next practice facility. That has come up. That's not necessarily new, but it certainly is notable that Rails said that. So a thank you to Ambassador Gutman for alerting us of this interview that Mitchell Rails granted. Email from Joe in Houston on the episode number of this podcast. Writes Joe, "I am no longer a fan of that NFL team that plays home games in Maryland, and I hate that forced new name more than you can imagine. However, I still enjoy your pod very much. It gets me through my gym workout each day by reminding me of everything that was taken from us." It's like the Waterboy movie starring Adam Sandler. The pod is my tackling fuel. Al, you are matching and are about to surpass a record set by Art Monk back in 1992. He set the NFL's career receptions record in 1992 when he made his 820th catch, and Art went on to add 120 more catches. Those were great times for our Redskins. We had it all. May you surpass that podcast record and beyond, just like Art. Thank you for your awesome pod. Joe in Houston moved to the DMV as a lifelong Redskins fan in the summer of 2020. Moved back to Houston in 2023. Thank you for the email, Joe. The summer of 2020, a heck of a time to move back to the Washington, D.C. area as a Skins fan, as the name Redskins would be no longer after the summer of 2020. Joe, I appreciate that email very much. I remember when all-time great Skins receiver Art Monk set that NFL record for most career regular season receptions. He did that during a Monday night game, October 12th, 1992, a 34-3 Skins blowout of the Denver Broncos at RFK Stadium on Monday Night Football. Monk had a 10-yard reception in the fourth quarter to surpass former Seattle Seahawks receiver Steve Largent for the most career regular season receptions in NFL history. Largent had 819. This was Monk's 820th reception. Here was the call. Al Michaels, Frank Gifford, and Dan Dierdorf on ABC.
Here's Monk now, set out on a wing to the left, and in motion, and all eyes are on number 81, including Rippon.
Here it is.
Throws!
Yeah.
There it is!
There it is!
Oh, how sweet it must be! Well, they'll take a delay again. Gladly. Could happen to a better man. Yeah. Good things do happen to good people.
Wow. Listen to that crowd. Listen to that crowd. There was a time when we had home crowds like that. Art Monk, for his career, had 940 regular season receptions. That now ranks 20th in NFL history. Art went from first to 20th to show you how much of a passing league the NFL has become. But yes, this episode is episode 820 of the podcast, and we salute the great Art Monk. Well, Art Monk's final season at Syracuse was 1979. 1979 also was the year in which the great law firm of Paulson and Nace was founded. If you have a case, contact Paulson and Nace. Paulson and Nace is a Washington, D.C.-based family law firm that handles medical malpractice, personal injury, birth injury, legal malpractice, and consumer protection cases, offering aggressive advocacy for victims in Washington, D.C. and West Virginia. Chris Nace, Matt Nace, and the rest of the team do excellent work. If you feel that you've been wronged, if you think that you've been wronged but aren't sure, call Paulson and Nace and schedule a no-obligation appointment. Call 202-902-7611. That's 202-902-7611. And when you call, tell Paulson and Nace that Al Galdi sent you. If you have a case, contact Paulson and Nace. Paulson and Nace has recovered millions of dollars for the sick and injured. Consider this. Paulson and Nace has taken on Big Pharma and won. Two verdicts versus Merrill Dow totaling $132 million. Also, Paulson and Nace took on the U.S. government and won. Bradley versus the United States of America. Paulson and Nace won a case for which the United States government had to pay nearly $1.8 million. If you have a case, contact Paulson and Nace. Call 202-902-7611. 202-902-7611. When you call, tell Paulson and Nace that Al Galdi sent you. You could also visit PaulsonandNace.com. Just don't forget to tell Paulson and Nace that Al Galdi sent you. Paulson and Nace, when tragedy happens, let the family of Paulson and Nace take care of your family.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Hey, if you happen to be listening to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, you can write a review of the podcast saying that you like it. The review can be just a sentence or two, but the reviews help out the podcast a lot. Thank you for doing them. The most notable pick by the Commanders in the 2024 NFL Draft was them taking LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels with the number 2 overall pick, but perhaps the best value pick by the Commanders in the 2024 NFL Draft was them taking Illinois interior defensive lineman Johnny Newton in the second round with the number 36 overall pick. Newton was the number 11 overall player on Pro Football Focus's big board for the 2024 NFL Draft, and yet the Commanders took him with the number 36 overall pick in the draft. Johnny Newton, over his final two collegiate seasons, registered an overall grade for Pro Football Focus of 91.8, which ranked number 2 among all qualified Power 5 conference interior defensive linemen during that span. PFF grades are on a scale of 0 to 100. Newton was the 2023 Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year and was a consensus first-team All-American for the 2023 season. This was Commanders General Manager Adam Peters during his press conference late night last Friday night on Johnny Newton.
Johnny, we could not believe he was still there, and we were a little nervous that he wasn't going to make it to us at 36. We looked at moving up to get him. Very surprising. We had a first round grade on him, and he is an explosive, violent player. He's a team captain. He got the commander tag, and he's exactly who we want to bring in this building. We think he's an advanced player. He can come in and play right away. Really a three down player. He can play on the rundowns, play on pass downs, skilled, hands and feet are tied together, and he arrives violently when he gets the ball, and he plays just like we want him to play. So just thrilled to get Johnny, and that started off a really good night for us.
All right, so that was Adam Peters late night last Friday night on Johnny Newton. This was Adam Peters on the Commanders YouTube show Command Center in an episode that came out this past Wednesday. Peters on how happy he was that Johnny Newton fell to the team at 36.
We were ecstatic because we were, you know, after Thursday night, you look at your board, and Johnny was really an outlier on our board, and we're looking at each other, and we talked about it Thursday night, and then again Friday morning, and we got a ton of phone calls Friday looking to trade up, and in the end, we said, if Johnny's there, we got to take him, even though that wasn't, you know, maybe the biggest position of need we had. He was clearly the highest player on our board, and he's a game wrecker, and he fits what we do perfectly, and he fits everything that a commander is, really. So just tough, smart, violent, everything you want, and he's a team captain, so we were happy to pull the trigger on that one.
Interesting that Adam Peters said that the Commanders turned down calls from NFL teams about trading up to 36. For much more on Johnny Newton, I'm pleased to welcome to the Al Galdi podcast Illinois co-defensive coordinator and defensive line coach Terrence Jamison. He was Illinois' defensive line coach for the 2021 and 2022 seasons. He, this past season, was Illinois' co-defensive coordinator and defensive line coach. Johnny Newton played for Illinois for four seasons, 2020 through 2023. So Coach Jamison knows Newton quite well. You can follow Terrence Jamison on X at Coach Jamison. Coach, it is great to talk to you. How are you?
I'm doing well, Al. Thanks for having me on your show, man.
I appreciate you coming on very much. Before we get into some specifics, generally speaking, what are the Commanders getting in Johnny Newton?
First off, they're getting an ultimate competitor, a guy that loves football, loves to play the game first and foremost, a great teammate, a guy that wants to win and does everything it takes to win, getting a guy that's coachable, a guy that's going to connect with his coaches, a guy that's going to connect with his teammates, is going to gain the respect, earn the respect of his teammates because of his habits and obviously because of his ability to produce on the field. So getting a special player, an even better young man.
In coaching Johnny Newton for three seasons, what impressed you the most about him as a player?
And you know what? He's never too high, never too low. You know, he doesn't allow the flashing lights to get to him. He's consistent, and so you know, the greatest test of the heart is the praise of the people. But you know, he constantly, you know, during his time at Illinois, he's had success, but it hasn't fazed him. It's only made him better, and so. that's been really impressive about Johnny.
Where did you see Johnny Newton improve the most during his time at Illinois?
Yeah, what jumps out is his ability to get to the quarterback. That's consistently improved each year, and even when the opponents knew about him, knew who he was, he just produced even more. And specifically, his ability to get to the quarterback on early downs, first and second down, and those opportunities. I mean, most of the game, 75% of the game is played on first down. So to be able to get out to the quarterback in those situations, that's something that he was able to improve at over the years that we've had him as a player at University of Illinois.
Well, Johnny Newton for the 2023 regular season was tied for number one among all interior defensive linemen in the FBS in quarterback pressures per Pro Football Focus at 44. What are the keys to an interior defensive lineman being a good pass rusher?
Yeah. You got to understand what you're trying to affect. You're trying to affect the quarterback, and you're trying to affect him in his comfort zone. And so a quarterback is most comfortable in the pocket. And so the quickest way to disrupt the quarterback in the pocket is from the middle push. That's where the quarterback wants to step up. And so what makes Johnny so special in that situation, what allows the interior D lineman to have success in that manner is, first and foremost, got to be effective against stopping a run. Because on early downs, a lot of your rushes, a lot of your opportunities to rush the passer is going to come off that transition rush, the rush in which you're working to stop the run, and it's a play action. And you got to get to an edge and get vertical. And so with Johnny, he perfected the necessary fundamentals to be effective against the run, knee bend, pad level extension, and that extension helps him with body control, helps him transition to an edge and get to that quarterback from the inside and affect that pocket.
It feels like with the quickness with which quarterbacks get rid of footballs now, interior push matters like never before. Because like you said, that is the quickest route to the quarterback. Is it accurate to say that interior pass rush matters more than ever before?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it all works together where you got three guys, four guys, five guys. All those guys have to be special, and they all work together. And so whether the pressure's coming from the outside or the inside, everyone has got to do their role and be selfless in terms of that. But it helps to have a special player like a Johnny Newton to change the game in all those positions, all those spots.
We're talking Johnny Newton with Illinois co-defensive coordinator and defensive line coach Terrence Jamison. What are the cuts from Adam Peters that had played earlier this segment included Peters calling Newton a three-down player? I'm assuming that you agree with that.
Oh, yeah, 100%. We benefited from that greatly, man. It saved a lot of lives. It's champagne, so I'll second that, man. And that was tremendous for our success.
And Adam Peters, in that aforementioned cut, also said that he was surprised that Johnny Newton fell to that number 36 overall pick. Were you surprised to see Newton fall that far?
You know what? I expect him to go in the first round, but at the same time, I had personally had a player that gotten drafted in the first round, so it was a new experience for me, and I was just more so just happy to be there in support of him and his family, and really just knowing that he was going to get picked, and I just know that you know God's in control, and ultimately he's going to go where he's called to go, and shoot, man, everything happens for a reason. So I'm just glad that for one Johnny got chosen to go where he went, and shoot, man, couldn't have been better to place to be at the Washington Commanders for Coach Quinn. You see what Coach Quinn has done, especially with the defensive line and his coaching career. I mean, He couldn't have been chosen to go in better hands.
Absolutely. Something that really stands out to me about Johnny Newton is how much he played in games. He, for the 2023 season for Pro Football Focus, led all FBS interior defensive linemen with 749 snaps. That is remarkable.
Yeah, Johnny's a guy that does not want to get out the game. And not only that, but he had the most snaps. I think he might have had the most snaps of any D lineman in college football. And we did a study on it. Just typically, I like to rotate a lot, but we did a study on Johnny because that question was brought up. And the more reps he took, the more he produced. And I'm talking, and not just because he has a lot of reps, but as the flow of a game went on, his production increased as the game went on, because in game time, he's getting a feel for his opponent, his matchup. And so, pass rush standpoint, what moves to use, tendencies that the offense is showing that may be different or the same, in which he saw studying the film during the week. And so, he takes care of his bodies because he was always the first guy in the building. Has a routine of maintaining his health, and that allowed him to play a lot of football. And he did it in high school. He played both sides of the ball, played running back, over 2,000 yards rushing as a running back. So. He was built for it.
Another thing about Johnny Newton's terrific 2023 season, he for the 2023 season led all players in the FBS with 4 blocked kicks. He blocked 2 field goal attempts and 2 extra point attempts. Very impressive. Newton on February 29th at the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis measured as only being 6'1 and 5/8 of an inch, so it's not like he's 6'6. What went into him being so good at blocking kicks?
he's a special player. I mean, wherever we put him at, I mean, it turns into gold. We probably could have put him back to return some kicks. I don't know. It may have happened there. But, He has a tremendous attention to detail, and so he's a very intelligent football player. And I'm talking not just reps, but from the meeting room, his note taking. I mean, every now and then I'll randomly grab their notebooks, and Johnny was a guy that takes. First of all, he writes neat. Not a lot of guys have neat handwriting. He's got neat handwriting. He's left handed, but he also puts affirmations at the bottom of each page. He focuses on self-talk to make sure he's mentally focused and locked in on what he's got to do on a day-to-day basis. But that attention to detail in the meeting room, whether we're talking about field goal block, we're talking about stopping a run on early downs or getting out to the quarterback on third down, he takes that to the field. And so if you have that consistently day by day, you have no choice but to get better. And that's been great about his game, and I'm not surprised.
Is there anything that jumps out at you in terms of an adjustment that Johnny Newton will have to make in the NFL?
That's a great question. Nothing jumps out right away for me, but he's willing. He's willing and able. We know he's able, but what's important nowadays is to have guys that are willing, and so he's not going to know everything coming through the door. But the good thing is he's coachable and he's more so willing to learn and adapt and be a great teammate.
For Commanders fans listening, is there a game or a play that they should check out on YouTube in order to get especially pumped up about Johnny Newton?
Man, there's a lot of them. There is a lot of them. Shoot, man, you just asked that question, and there's a bunch going through my head right now. The one play from this past season I'll point to that jumps out in my mind. It was the first drive that he got in against Minnesota this past season. He had been out. For the first half because of the last game, and third down on that first drive, Minnesota's in the red area. Approaching a low red area, and he makes he's a 4-eye in the boundary. He makes a club arm over move around the tackle and proceeds to chase the quarterback down. Quarterback's rolling out to the field, trying to find a hole in the zone, and here comes Johnny right behind him. He gets the sack, and he just holds his palms out like, I'm back. I'm here, and we proceeded to win that game, and so it just really changed the tide of that game. That's the impact that he has on a game. We have been trailing that game all the way through it at that point, and so I really gave a spark to our team.
Well, we certainly are excited to have Johnny Newton. His development and success are credits to you as a coach, Illinois co-defensive coordinator and defensive line coach, Terrence Jamison. Coach, thank you and all the best.
Awesome. Thanks, Al. I appreciate your time. Thanks for having me on your show, and excited about Johnny and watch the Commanders.
All right. Johnny Newton, human wrecking machine. Pressures quarterback, stops the run, blocks kicks, plays a ton of snaps. I love it. Well, if you enjoy this podcast, check out BGO Blind Pig, the official podcast of BGObsession.com. BGO Blind Pig is a roundtable discussion of all things Washington Commanders football. Lots of good and passionate Commanders conversation from Commanders fans who know the team well. You can find the BGO Blind Pig podcast on YouTube, on Apple Podcasts, or on any major podcast provider. Make BGObsession.com the home for your burgundy and gold obsession, and make the BGO Blind Pig podcast one of your weekly DC football listens. Well, the Nationals this week played a three-game series at the reigning defending World Series champion Texas Rangers, who years ago were the MLB team of Washington, D.C. The Texas Rangers were the Washington Senators from 1961 through 1971. That was the second incarnation of the Senators. Those Senators teams were really bad. And the Nats offense in this three-game series at the Rangers ended up being really bad. Ended up being Senators-like, if you will. Thursday afternoon, a 6-0 loss at the Rangers. This off a 7-1 loss on Tuesday night and a 1-0 win on Wednesday night. So the Nats in this series scored a total of 2 runs. It's actually impressive that the Nats did not get swept in this series. So the Nats for this 2024 MLB regular season now are 15-16. But this really was one of the worst offensive series that the Nats have had since the franchise moved to DC in the 2004-2005 offseason. I mean, think about what just happened. 2 runs over 3 games. Specific to Thursday afternoon, the Nats scored no runs, totaled just 4 hits, did work 3 walks, but went 0-for-2 with runners in scoring position and struck out 12 times. Rangers starting pitcher Nathan Eovaldi, now in his age 34 season, but still going strong. He tossed 5 1/3 scoreless innings with 8 strikeouts. The Nats' 4 hits were made up of 2 doubles and 2 singles. The 2 doubles came from C.J. Abrams and Luis Garcia Jr. C.J. Abrams, he is the Nats' starting shortstop and number 1 batter, went 1-for-4 with a double. Abrams, in the top of the third, had a 2-out first pitch double into right center field. Luis Garcia Jr., he is an at starting second baseman and number 3 batter, went 1-for-4 with a double and 2 strikeouts. Garcia in the top of the first had a 2-out opposite field double to left center field. 2 of the Nats' 3 walks came from Nick Senzel. He is an at starting DH and number 2 batter, went 0-for-2 with 2 walks and 2 strikeouts. But that was about it in terms of anything notably positive from the Nats' offense. Jesse Winker on Thursday afternoon as an at starting left fielder and number 5 batter, went 0-for-4, concluding a series in which he went 0-for-11. Winker has cooled off big time since his hot start. Eddie Rosario on Thursday afternoon as the Nats starting right fielder and number 7 batter, went 0-for-2 with 2 strikeouts. He, for this regular season, now has an OPS of 290, which is really bad. The Nats starting pitcher in this 6-0 loss at the Rangers on Thursday afternoon was Mitchell Parker, a man who knows the state of Texas well. The Nats took Parker in the 5th round of the 2020 MLB draft out of San Jacinto College, which is a public community college in Texas. Is the same college from which the Nats drafted starting pitcher Jackson Rutledge. Parker on Thursday afternoon was so-so. He allowed 3 runs in 5 1/3 innings. He gave up 6 hits, which were 2 doubles and 4 singles. He issued 2 walks and a wild pitch. He did have 5 strikeouts. He did throw a lot of strikes. 83 pitches, 56 strikes versus 27 balls. All 3 of the runs that Parker allowed came in the bottom of the second, during which he allowed 3 runs on a double, 3 singles, and a walk. Now, one of the singles was a 2-out RBI infield single by the Rangers' number 9 batter, Evan Carter, on a hot shot grounder that went off first baseman Joey Meneses, although the ball had an exit velocity of 106.3 miles per hour per Statcast. However, Nats manager Davey Martinez, during his postgame session with reporters on Thursday, said that Meneses should have made that play. I was a bit surprised that Davey said that. Take a listen to this exchange with my co-host on the Nats Chat podcast, Nats Insider, Mark Zuckerman of massinsports.com.
You mentioned Mitchell deserving to only give up the one run. Did you feel like the play at first could have been made by Meneses?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that play should have been made. I mean, it was hit hard, but, you know, just it's a part of one step. But, you know, like I said, he other than that inning, he threw the ball really well.
Well, Mitchell Parker now over four starts since the Nats recalled him from AAA Rochester on April 15th. ERA at 2.53, whip of 1.08, 19 strikeouts versus four walks. Now, he over the four starts has totaled just 21 and a third innings. But overall, Parker has been good, has been a pleasant surprise, I would say. The Nats bullpen on Thursday afternoon, three Nats relievers combined to allow three runs in 2 2/3 innings. Jacob Barnes faced two batters and got two outs. Jordan Weems tossed a perfect bottom of the seventh, but Matt Barnes allowed three runs in the bottom of the eighth. But bottom line, the Nats need to hit better. The Nats, for this regular season, now have a team OPS of just 666. And take a listen to this exchange during Davey Martinez's postgame session with reporters on Thursday.
You mentioned the middle of the order. What do you, are you looking to change that up in the coming days? Or?
And do what? Right? I mean, it seems like they're all struggling right now. So we got to, like I said, we got to keep working, keep grinding, and try to get them going.
Yeah, that answer from Davey Martinez says a lot. Next up for the Nats is a three-game series against the Toronto Blue Jays at Nationals Park. Game one, Friday evening at 6:45. Patrick Corbin will be the Nats starting pitcher. Game two, Saturday afternoon at 4:05. Jake Irvin will be the Nats starting pitcher. And game three, Sunday afternoon at 1:35. Mackenzie Gore will be the Nats starting pitcher.
It's only a kick. A jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, the Orioles ended up doing quite well in their big four-game series against the New York Yankees at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. Monday evening, a 2-0 win. Tuesday evening, a 4-2 win. Wednesday evening, a 2-0 loss. But Thursday afternoon, a 7-2 win. As the O's, Joe Angel, were back in the win column.
And the Orioles again in the win column.
Yes, thank you, Joe. The win column. And the O's, via winning three out of the four games in this series, come out of the series with a one-game lead on the Yankees for first place in the American League East. The O's for this 2024 MLB regular season now are 20-11, whereas the Yankees are 20-13. The Orioles starting pitcher on Thursday afternoon ended up being Kyle Bradish. Yes, I said Kyle Bradish. The O's did not announce their starting pitcher for Thursday afternoon until Thursday morning. We thought that the starting pitcher might be John Means, as the O's on Wednesday afternoon announced having reinstated Means from the 15-day injured list, which he had been on since March 28th, retroactive to March 25th, with a left forearm strain. However, the O's on Wednesday, not just announcing Means as the starting pitcher for Thursday afternoon, suggested that he might not be the starting pitcher for Thursday afternoon, and sure enough, he wasn't. Now, he is going to start this weekend, but the O's on Thursday morning announced having reinstated Kyle Bradish from the 15-day injured list, which he had been on since March 28th, retroactive to March 25th, with a UCL sprain in his right elbow. By the way, the corresponding roster move to the O's activating Bradish was them designating reliever Johan Ramirez for assignment. This despite Ramirez having been really good in the Orioles' 2-0 loss to the Yankees on Wednesday evening. Ramirez in that game tossed a perfect top of the ninth, despite facing the Yankees' numbers 2-4 batters in Juan Soto, Aaron Judge, and Giancarlo Stanton. But yeah, Kyle Bradish, the Orioles' best pitcher last season. We didn't know what to think when he got diagnosed with this UCL sprain in his right elbow. You had to wonder if maybe he might be out for the majority, if not the entirety, of this regular season. But Bradish made his 2024 Major League regular season debut on Thursday afternoon. Bradish in the 2023 regular season, 168 and two-thirds innings over 30 starts, ERA at 2.83, ERA plus of 1.44, a whip of 1.043, a strikeouts per nine innings of 8.96. He, for the 2023 regular season, was number four among all qualified pitchers in the majors in ERA at 2.83, and was number five among all pitchers in the majors in wins above replacement WAR per Baseball Reference at 4.9. And so Bradish in this 7-2 win over the Yankees on Thursday afternoon was back, and he, all things considered, did well. He allowed one run in 4 2/3 innings with five strikeouts. Gave up four hits, which were a triple, a double, and two singles. He issued two walks and a hit by pitch. He over his 4 2/3 innings threw 84 pitches, 51 strikes versus 33 balls. Bradish tossed a scoreless top of the first, despite Aaron Judge reaching base via a two-out catcher's interference error by James McCann. And then Bradish issuing a two-out hit-by-pitch of Anthony Rizzo. And then Bradish issuing a two-out walk of Gleyber Torres. This was O's manager, Brandon Hyde, during his post-game press conference on Thursday afternoon on Kyle Bradish. And then you'll hear multiple follow-up exchanges.
Well, it was great to see him back. It's like he hasn't lost a beat. He just threw outstanding. It was really coming out early, especially in the first inning. It was a bunch of 97s up there, balls going everywhere in the strike zone. So he's got a ton of movement to his fastball and a good slider or breaking ball. But it was awesome to see him back, and he had great stuff in his first time out.
Impressed with the way he bounced back from him. That first inning could have gotten away from him.
But well, it was a weird start to the game. It was a little bit of everything, and it could have gotten Harry there in the first inning, and so for him to keep his composure and get out of that with a zero, that was huge.
You're impressed with the way, not just that he handled today, but the past couple months haven't been easy. Are you impressed with how he's handled that?
Yeah, he's I know how disappointed he was to not be able to pitch in spring and be able to be with us, and he's worked so hard to, and it's meant a lot to him to come back, and just to miss him for the first month, have other guys step up, and for him to join us now, it's a great feeling. But he has worked his tail off to get to this point, so we're so excited to have him back.
Is the path forward just, build a little more strength as he goes? Is that?
Yeah, he threw 85 pitches today, 4 2/3 of, kind of a long first. That was kind of the max of what we had for him, honestly, and hopefully we can just build from there.
All right, so Kyle Bradish in this 7-2 win over the Yankees on Thursday afternoon was solid in his 2024 Major League regular season debut. And then the Orioles bullpen was good for a fourth time in four games in this series. Four Orioles relievers combined to allow one run in 4 1/3 innings with six strikeouts. Now, Keegan Aiken allowed a run in 1 1/3 innings. He in the top of the sixth gave up a leadoff home run by Gleyber Torres to left center field to cut the Orioles' lead to 7-2. The homer went a projected 418 feet per Statcast, but Danny Coulomb in the top of the seventh faced three batters and got two outs. Jacob Webb was awesome. He tossed 1 1/3 perfect innings with 3 swinging strikeouts, which were of the Yankees' numbers 3 through 5 batters in Aaron Judge, Anthony Rizzo, and Gleyber Torres. And Cionel Pérez tossed a perfect top of the ninth with 2 swinging strikeouts. Orioles relievers in this series combined to allow just 1 run in 12 2/3 innings. Outstanding, especially given the question mark that the Orioles bullpen had been recently, and probably still is, but a really good series by the pen. And Brandon Hyde in this series ended up never pitching his closer, Craig Kimbrell, who has been dealing with upper back tightness, but who this past weekend blew a save chance in each of his 2 appearances in a 3-game series against the Oakland A's at Oriole Park at Camden Yards, a series in which the O's lost 2 of 3 games. And how about Jacob Webb? I mentioned what he did on Thursday afternoon. Webb in the Orioles 4-2 win over the Yankees on Tuesday evening faced 4 batters and got 4 outs for the save. He generated 3 swinging strikeouts, and he did this in facing the Yankees numbers 3 through 6 batters in Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, Anthony Rizzo, and Gleyber Torres. Brandon Hyde, during his post-game press conference on Thursday afternoon on Jacob Webb.
Well, it was unbelievable, and I'm not really giving him like I said earlier, I'm not really giving him a layup when I give him the ball either. It's middle of the order and big spots and tough guys to pitch to, and guys that have had unbelievable careers up until this point, and guys are going to that are record-breaking type, all-star type players, and he pitched so well. Great changeup. You know, really good changeups to Rizzo, really good changeup to Judge. They're able to mix the 3 pitches with the slider is outstanding.
Yes, it is. And the Orioles offense, which really was not good over the first 3 games of the series, was good in this 7-2 win over the Yankees on Thursday afternoon. The O's scored 7 runs. The O's totaled 8 hits, which were 3 home runs, a triple, a double, and 3 singles. The O's did work no walks, but the O's went 2 for 5 with runners in scoring position. Ryan Mountcastle, he is the Orioles starting first baseman and number 3 batter, went 2 for 4 with a solo homer and an RBI single. Mountcastle and an Orioles 1-run third had a 2-out opposite field solo homer to right center field to tie the game at 1. The homer went a projected 405 feet per stat cast. And Mountcastle in an Orioles 4-run fifth had an opposite field RBI single to right center field for a 4-1 Orioles lead. Ryan Mountcastle for this regular season is number 3 among all qualified Orioles at OPS at 840. Another standout on Thursday afternoon was Jordan Westberg. He is the Orioles starting third baseman and number 5 batter, went 2 for 4 with a 2-run triple and a single. Westberg in that Orioles 4-run fit had a went out 2-run triple to the left center field gap for a 6-1 Orioles lead. Jordan Westberg for this regular season is number 2 among all qualified Orioles in OPS at 890. Great to see the O's win 3 of 4 games against the Yankees. Here was Brandon Hyde during his post-game press conference on Thursday afternoon on the O's winning 3 of the 4 games in this big series.
Well, yeah, it's still early. That's a really, really good team, and we saw how good their pitching is this series. They're going to win a ton of games with the lineup that's going to score runs and that the pitching with Holmes at the end. That's going to be a really, really tough team to beat all year. And so, you know, it's 4 of 14. Is that right? 13 or 14 we play them? How many? 13. So, still play them 9 more times. But we got off to a good start and happy with how the series went.
All right, next up for the O's is a 3-game series at the Cincinnati Reds. Game 1 Friday evening at 6:10. Cole Irvin will be the Orioles starting pitcher. Game 2 Saturday evening at 6:40. John Means will be the Orioles starting pitcher and will be making his 2024 Major League regular season debut. And Game 3 Sunday afternoon at 4:10. Dean Kramer will be the Orioles starting pitcher. And that will do it for you and me for now. Keep the feedback coming. You can hit me up on X at Al Galdi. You can email me the Al Galdi podcast at yahoo.com. Monday show episode 821 We'll have a lot for you on the Commanders. Also on Monday's show, I'll talk Nationals and Orioles. The Nats this weekend have a three-game series against the Toronto Blue Jays at Nationals Park. The O's this weekend have a three-game series at the Cincinnati Reds. Have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you on Monday.
Greatness is a journey that takes time.
The headlines remind us daily, the world is a dangerous place. The elites in charge say everything's fine, stop noticing. But you know better. And your gut knows that time is short to prepare for a world that is four missed meals away from chaos. My Patriot Supply has helped over 3 million families become more self-reliant and is the company Americans trust to prepare. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling three-month emergency food kits. Each contain delicious breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Secure at least one food kit for each family member. For a limited time, save $200, plus get free shipping on all their Ready Hour three-month emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. My Patriot Supply also has solar power generators, water filtration units, biomass stoves, heirloom seeds, and critical survival gear. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.